The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. Thank you for joining us. Just got an email from listener Jamie that said, can you please repeat what you said about CNN and NBC paying somebody $70,000 for a video? Here's the story as I know it. John Sullivan is a self-identified Antifa member. He was at the Capitol, the day of the breach, you know, the one supposedly incited by the insurrection by the former president. On camera, he is talking about burn this place down. He's encouraging people. CNN, NBC paid him $70,000 for the video. You figure that one out and you let me know how that makes any logical sense whatsoever. Speaking of social unrest in our country, there's an amazing DVD that's available to you featuring Dennis Prager and Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills' very own Pastor Jack Hibbs. It's called Social Unrest in America. If you go to KKLA.com and use the promo code KKLA, you'll get a 20% discount. It's an amazing video. What can we do to reverse this chaos and insanity? Watch Social Unrest in America, KKLA.com. Use the promo code KKLA for a 20% discount. Our state, depending on who you talk to, is in a bit of trouble. The Recall Gavin 2020 campaign has announced they've reached 1.5 million signatures. And they are going to push for an extra 500,000, leaving no doubt about the validity of this campaign. The deadline is March the 17th. One of the spokespersons for Recall Gavin 2020 said, quote, we know Governor Newsom is getting desperate right now. His political career is blowing up before him. We want to get 2 million signatures and not leave any doubt whatsoever about the veracity of the people in our state. Even 300,000 Democrats have downloaded the petition and signed the recall. He said it's something that transcends both parties. RecallGavin2020.com. By the way, speaking of the governor, there is a, I believe he's a sergeant, that has spoken out about the way in which our governor addresses violent crime. If you've not heard this one, again, you need to be literate about what's going on in our state, especially from the position of Sacramento.
1.5 million people in California have signed a recall petition to bounce their governor, Gavin Newsom, out of office for incompetence. One police sergeant in California who served nearly 20 years has had enough of him, too. And he spoke out in public at great risk to his own career. Watch.
Under Governor Newsom, men like this are often released from prison because he classifies them as nonviolent offenders. What is even more disturbing, over the past year, Governor Newsom has been quietly releasing thousands of inmates from prisons throughout the state. He is doing so without any threat assessment and with complete disregard for the safety of Californians. The term nonviolent offender is a phrase people like Gavin Newsom and new LA District Attorney George Gascon like to use often. They want you to believe these individuals do not pose a risk to the safety of the public.
The brave man in that video is Sergeant Adam Garcia, and he joins us tonight. Sergeant Garcia, thanks for coming on. Obviously, you said that in public and come on the show at some risk to your own job. Why did you feel moved to say that?
Well, first, Tucker, thank you for having me. You know, I just... You know, when you're out there and dealing with the public, when you're in working these communities that have been hit really hard with poverty and gang crime and things like that, they're often forgot. you know, and for me, I just felt that it was very important for me to go ahead and speak up for the people who are voiceless right now. You know, a lot of these policies have been passed by people who have political aspirations higher than their current office, and these people are being overlooked. And I thought it was just time for me to finally speak up for these people and be a voice for the voiceless.
Amen. So it's poor people who are hit hardest, who are killed by these policies. No one ever says that. You see it in your job, and that's what moved you?
Absolutely. I mean, we're seeing crime scenes right now that are out there with the amount of shootings, the amount of gang violence that's starting to resurface. We were able to use in the past, a lot of agencies are able to use things like gang enhancement, gang injunctions to really, really put a dent in a lot of gang crime. Well, those things are being pulled from us now. And what we're starting to see now is in a lot of these poor areas, gangs are starting to reestablish themselves in these communities and are starting to, you know, extort businesses and things like that. And it's because these policies that we used in the past, these laws that we had to our that we were able to take advantage of in the past have basically been pulled from us now. So, again, it's mostly in poor minority communities. You don't see it in Anaheim or in Anaheim Hills or anything like that. You see it in the poorest areas.
Of course you do. Lieutenant Garcia, you are brave to say that out loud, and I hope that you escape with your job. Thank you for coming on tonight.
Tucker, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Again, the recall campaign website, recallgavin2020.com, if you'd like to find out more information. We have open phones, 888-528-2557. If you'd like to weigh in on anything you've heard so far, or maybe as we progress later in the hour, do we really have a problem with white supremacy in our country? One story in particular out of Oregon, maybe you can help me with, because I am very confused. Although I suspect I'm not as confused as I think I am. Also, an actor is on record now as talking about a new kind of child abuse, something you all need to know about. But one last thought about safety in our state and our country and what's going on with immigration. And again, I've gotten a couple emails, people that you say you're Christian, you support the current administration. Maybe you're not in a position to call and you feel better just shoot me an email. So be it. And yes, I'm hitting the new administration pretty hard, especially on their policies now. Immigration policies? Do you know what's going on in our country and what's happening at the border? Former acting U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Director Tom Homan is on record now as saying that the recent surge at the southern border has now increased to 3,000 arrests per day last month. Think about that. These are thousands of people that have been arrested, not the ones that have gotten through. Homan said the surge is here. The truth is, it's even more than that. Now you times that by a month, that's 120,000 people a month, 1.4 million a year. This isn't by accident. This is by design. This is an open border strategy by the Biden administration. He also said ICE has lost 95% of their criminal targets they arrest every year. People convicted of crimes, 95% of them are off the table. Now, the new administration says public safety is still important. By the way, before I read on, I think some of you, maybe you're in shock. Do you have buyer's remorse? Maybe you're realizing that your confusion, anger, whatever it was about the previous administration, one of the reasons why you voted for this administration, maybe you're taking a long, hard look now and thinking, what did I do? I'd love to have that conversation with you. Maybe you're good with thousands of troops around the Capitol, barbed wire fencing 2-3 miles long in the United States of America. Why? Because the white supremacists are on the prowl. We'll get to that in a little while. Let me finish the Tom Homan story. He's the former director of ICE. He's concerned about immigration and the influx of immigrants coming across the border. Biden administration is on record, Joe Biden specifically, about saying he's not concerned about DUIs. He doesn't see that as a problem. Homan says, well, if DUI is not a public safety issue, the reality is 10,000 people die a year from DUIs. And that the current administration, if they sat down and talked to an angel mom or angel dad whose children were killed by someone here illegally over a DUI, they lost their children, maybe they'd have a different position. He also talked about thousands of family units now in the United States have been released over the past few weeks with no COVID testing whatsoever. He said on top of that, as soon as they get to the destination, they qualify for a work visa now. They're going to be competing for the same jobs that unemployed Americans are competing for because the unemployment rate is extremely high. Homan says, so you know the Biden administration says we're concerned about COVID. We want federal mandates on masks. We're shutting down schools. At the same time, thousands are coming across the border with no COVID testing, no mask, then being released in the United States to compete for the same jobs. Many of the middle-class workers who are out of work now because of the lockdowns are competing for. He says it's a switch on the American people. The administration doesn't care about employment of Americans. They don't care about COVID. Honestly, Homan says they would take action on the border to protect Americans if indeed they did. 888-528-2557 are always the phone numbers to call in the program. Y'all know who actor Rob Schneider is? You know, he's done his share of funny roles, and he's been around for quite a while. He's pretty much a high-profile actor. Well, he has come out. He has spoken out against some of the COVID-19 safety protocols in schools. He now says that some of the protocols that are pushed forth are taxpayer-funded forms of child abuse. Listen to this. Schneider over the weekend shared a video from an elementary school classroom showing rows of desks surrounded by plexiglass. I watched the video. It's horrifying. The video says, this is bad. Forest Brook Elementary teacher Teresa Holmes recorded a video of her classroom, which has 28 desks now armed with plexiglass shields. Now, let me stop down. There are 28 desks in a row, and each desk is completely encircled by a thick plexiglass shield. So you got 28 kids lined up next to each other in like these little self-imposed prisons, masks on. Schneider says we're witnessing a new kind of child abuse, bought and paid for with our tax dollars. He says the collapse of public schools who follow this example will surely follow. History will not look back at this kindly at all. In the video, the teacher lamented how the school board spent up to $5 million on plexiglass and safety measures without seeming to consider the practicality of teaching in such an environment. In other words, and hear me loud and clear, I'm not hitting hard on schools. There are many schools. I mean, we had principals in yesterday talking about all the efforts they've gone to open their school and ensure safety for our children. Private, Christian education. These are public schools. And so this teacher says, yeah, we spent all this money, but we really didn't think about this. We didn't think it through. She said, this is my classroom. I have a rather large classroom compared to others. I have 28 desks in here right now. And the view is from the middle seat of the back row. She said she was shocked when she actually saw when all the desks were lined up and all in plexiglass. Back of the room, kids wearing masks behind all this plexiglass. Can this be healthy? Schneider said, we're advocating with the strict mitigation measures. I'm sorry, this is the teacher, including universal and mandatory masking, 6 foot of distancing, at least K through five, Can you imagine kindergarten through fifth grade putting these kids through this? This is what we're doing. Critics of the new CDC guidelines have pointed out that they have set impossible standards for reopening without mass vaccination, leading to speculation that the teachers' unions have a heavy hand in influencing them. Do you think so? Have you seen the waffling on Capitol Hill? You talk about being in the pocket of the teachers' unions. I'm not even going to get into if you have a child in public school right now, if you didn't listen to yesterday's program. Again, I'm not here to motivate you through fear. But private Christian education in and of itself, with the way the climate of culture is, to me is a no-brainer. But yet a lot of people say, well, yeah, it costs money. I don't know if I can afford it. Very, very good point. And that is in part why we attempt to partner with many schools and bless you with half-off tuition, where it's literally half the price of tuition to many schools, preschools, high schools, middle schools. Just go to kkla.com for all the information. I just can't even think our now 13-year-old son, what he's been through. I saw a post from a dear friend whose daughter is a senior now in high school. Went back today after 341 days. And you don't think we're going to look back and maybe recoil in horror about the damage that has been caused by these policies? Well, you may say, Frank, you're insensitive. Hundreds of thousands of people have died. That's a conversation well worth having. How has the state of Florida been open? Schools are open. When they started doing that, boy, Governor DeSantis, boy, the left and the media just blasted him about he's setting a precedent for a state super spreader. He needs to be bounced out of office. He's irresponsible. Well, the numbers don't lie. They haven't had problems there. But yet right here in the state of California, and you may have heard Barbara Ferrer yesterday. And the challenge is we as parents, we need to act. We need to be responsible. We need to be informed. And especially if you profess faith in Christ, we need to stop acting in fear. I talked to so many parents that are so afraid of a virus. I think some of us are more afraid of a virus than we are of God. 888-528-2557. What about this thing called white supremacy? A story out of Oregon. We'll walk through it together. I don't even have the words to describe what the story is, other than a sign of the times. And you talk about an attempt to speak something into truth that is a blatant lie. And the people say, we'll just follow. More of the Frank Sontag Show next. Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. Thank you for joining us. I made a comment, Rob Schneider's in the news, talking about a new form of child abuse. He's very critical about what some public schools in our country have done. One example is a video taken by a teacher of 28 desks end-to-end with thick plexiglass around each desk. And she said her school spent $5 million, and paraphrasing, they didn't really think it through. Good intention, maybe, but can you imagine having a six-year-old sit in this self-enclosed, like, prison with a mask on with other of her or his classmates around them? And this is a way that we are showing our children the ways of teaching, and when you think about what we've been told about, for me the issue is more of lockdowns, not even the coronavirus. And we can have discussions about maybe our different views of COVID. But it seems like, as the expression goes, the goalposts are always changing. Newsom did it again recently. Gee, I wonder if him opening up restrictions has anything to do with the recall campaign. But I think ultimately it's on us as parents. But the damage to children, we don't hear that in a lot of the narrative. We just hear about the devastation of this virus. We don't talk about therapeutics or the lack thereof. We just hear about the vaccines as the being the end all. We don't hear about mysteriously they've stopped tracking viruses like the flu, which kills tens of thousands of Americans every year. But we hear about this awful, and it is an awful virus. Don't twist my words. But do the ends justify the means, especially as it applies to our children? I'm not so sure. Eric in Compton, always good to hear from you. Thank you for calling the Frank Sontag Show, Eric.
Can you hear me okay, Frank?
So far, so good.
Okay, Frank, sometimes I want to call, but I don't. I don't want to sound like Johnny One Note, but somebody, I heard CNN mention, and that just got my blood boiling. I really don't think that the average American in this country has any idea as to how pervasive the lies are from all of the news media. It's hard to, I don't have the words to explain how often and how much they absolutely just straight out lie to your face, look at you with a straight face and just lie. See, if I can give you a quick example of the brainwashing and how it goes, 9/11. It's not a trick question, Frank. How many buildings are you aware fell, came down?
Well,
ask your audience the same question.
Yeah, well, the two big ones, the World Trade Centers, would be two, and then there was another one. I think it's Building 7 came down as well.
Okay, well, you know that because you're informed. Do you know half of America does not even know about Building 7? And you know why they don't know? Because no plane hit it. So it would be a little hard to explain how a seven-story building fell in 7 seconds, but no plane hit it. Might make you ask questions about the other two, huh? But that's just to show you the brainwashing that people don't know. One more question. You know the word association game? You say a word, then you come up with the first word that hits your mind? I'm going to say a word. Give me the first word that comes up. Conspiracy?
Well, be theory.
Exactly. This is brainwashing, Frank. There's been all kind of conspiracies all throughout history.
Sure.
Kennedy was a conspiracy. Reagan. I mean, I could go on and on with the conspiracies. But your mind has been trained to think conspiracy theory. And it's all kind of conspiracies all throughout history. What irritates me the most, Frank, you still there?
I sure am.
What irritates me the most is, like I said, I hate to sound like Johnny One Note, but this stuff is so knowable. Frank, these people who want to run the world and who are using the Democratic Party to do so, these people write books, Frank. They make speeches. They make movies. You can know this stuff. This stuff is knowable. Frank, I've got a 12th grade education, and I know. So there's no excuse for people not to know. But then again, when you get back to Scripture, it says in 2 Thessalonians, I think it is, where because people wouldn't receive not the truth, but the love of the truth, God's going to send them strong delusion. And, you know, this guy that's coming who's going to trick people, he's going to use signs and wonders. He's going to be doing miracles. Yep. So you think they're deceived now. You just wait. You often quote a scripture, Frank, that I love, Isaiah 5:20. Woe unto them who call good evil and evil good. Frank, these people can't even make a distinction between good and evil anymore. It's really sad.
Well, let me share this. As I said, Eric, I always appreciate when you call. You mentioned conspiracy first word theory, and somehow it's spun into no validity, no justification, no credence. When the word conspiracy, conspire, there is a legitimate way in which things have been conspired with an end in mind. It's not You use a very interesting point about the brainwash thing. Let me just get into the media for a moment. Didn't plan on it, but I think it's a good opportunity. So the idea that we live in a day and age by which now it seems as if something is really pushed hard in a narrative, and it's being told is the truth, is powerful when you hear it enough over and over again. And Tucker Carlson did this last night. And this piece speaks for itself. Just listen to this.
The thing about journalism is it's not an individual achievement. It's about the group. In journalism, it's the collective spirit that matters. Like synchronized swimmers or certain species of insects, journalists move together.
And by the way, Tucker is being satirical here. He's talking about journalism should be investigative. It should be about finding the truth and coming from different viewpoints and not somehow just wanting to be people in positions of authority, best buddies or friends. That's the angle that Tucker is saying. But wait till you hear the audio clips he plays. Keep listening.
Concert, as a herd, if you will. When Joe Biden writes a talking point, they repeat it. Not just a few of them, but all of them in precisely the same way. Think of reporters as the North Korean gymnastics team celebrating Kim Il-sung Day in a soccer stadium in Pyongyang. They move as one. Watch this clip, for example. Members of the press corps inform you that this new group of politicians in Washington is very different from any other group of politicians in all of human history. Unlike the rest of them, these people are committed to something called the truth.
President Joe Biden making it clear his administration will be nothing like his predecessors, with a focus on truth, science, and transparency.
A commitment to clarity, transparency, science, and truth.
A return to normalcy as the Biden administration vows truth and transparency now.
As the Biden White House vows transparency and truth when sharing information with the American people, what does that mean? We're going to talk about it.
As this White House promises to bring truth and science back to the White House.
It's getting back to the truth. And valuing the truth.
Getting back to the truth, valuing the truth. Now, there's a refreshing concept. Who does that remind you of, by the way? We don't want to be patriarchal here, but if we're being totally honest, that sounds a lot like Dad. A little blunt sometimes, but honest, a straight shooter. Solid, reliable, steady. That's Joe Biden. Above all, Joe Biden's a family man. Took the train back to Wilmington every night. To the 10,000 square foot estate a campaign donor bought for him in exchange for unregistered lobbying on behalf of credit card companies. Biden's not like the last guy. Joe Biden's family is refreshingly normal. There aren't any weird sex scandals or protracted drug problems or ongoing criminal investigations you've got to worry about. Want to know what the Bidens are doing this weekend? A recent headline in Newsweek will tell you. Quote, Joe Biden wins in Mario Kart race against granddaughter at Camp David. It's wholesome stuff like that, not secretly lobbying for China, not impregnating strippers from Arkansas. No, they're playing Mario Kart with the grandkids, just like you.
In other words, the media today repeat talking points in unison. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. That's not what journalism is. And a man that's been in the trenches for a long time is Britt Hume. If you don't know who he is, listen to this exchange. Talk about truth.
So, Britt, I watched you, and I don't want to date anybody, but I watched you literally as a kid cover our federal government from the Congress, from the White House lawn. And I never heard you once ask any politician how that person's love story was going to heal a nation. How do you assess questions like that?
Well, it's gushing coverage, and it's something that, you know, when I was coming along as a reporter, you, no matter how you personally felt about a politician, favorably or unfavorably, you just didn't introduce that or show it, and you certainly never gushed. And when a politician was promising all kinds of wonderful things, you never announced that they were going to achieve them. What you said was that they said they were going to achieve them. And you said that you kept your distance. You didn't make their opinions and statements your own. You kept a distance. And this was a set of customs. Not so much of objectivity, nobody's really capable of that, but of neutrality in which you approached everything. And you disciplined yourself as a journalist not to allow your personal feelings to infect your coverage. You kept your distance. And what I think has happened, Tucker, over the past several decades is that journalists have collectively, the press collectively, always had power. We discovered during Watergate how much power individual reporters could have. You know, two reporters from the Washington Post did very good reporting, by the way, that ultimately led to the downfall of a president, a hated president, a president particularly, you know, he was a Republican and basically a conservative, hated by the media. And they found that they had this power, and they've been itching to exercise it in any way they could ever since. And then along came Donald Trump, and the process really accelerated because journalists took the view, you know, it was consonant with their own personal views, that this man's presence in the White House was a national emergency. And the old restraints were completely abandoned. And we had this headlong pursuit of the story that ended up having nothing to it, really, about Russia collusion. But it looked so much like the kind of story that could bring a president down they couldn't resist. In the meantime, something else, Tucker, has happened, I think. And that is that the country has grown so big that, you know, advertisers turned to newspapers because they wanted the biggest possible audience. But nowadays, if you only have a niche audience in a country this big, it can be big enough so that you have something advertisers want. And then there's, on top of that, there's this. The New York Times is the best example of it. The New York Times is increasingly turning to advertising, I mean, to revenue from subscriptions. People buy these online subscriptions. It's worked very well. The Times is doing very well with it. But now, instead of being beholden to advertisers, which was never really much of a problem, these journals are beholden to their subscribers. And their subscribers, if you're the New York Times, they're on the left. So they get those readers get a steady diet of just what they want.
I just think, though, and I understand all of that, and I think that's a really smart analysis of what undergirds a lot of these trends. But you got to think at the level of the individual reporter. If you find yourself on a Sunday at your computer typing out a story that begins, Joe and Jill Biden's love will heal this nation, that your self-respect is going to be offended. You got to think to yourself, you know, I'm not anybody's flunky, you know, like I'm not going to rewrite a press release for some politician. People don't seem to feel that way anymore. They're happy to.
Well, I think one of the things that the Watergate era, and I should repeat, Watergate was good reporting. The story was real. But I think what that era ushered into journalism was a lot of people who wanted to exercise power. And, you know, they came in, they had a side, and they took the side. And so you get this, you know, you get this really harsh coverage of Donald Trump. There was really no effort in mainstream media to treat him fairly, to report on the things that he did that illustrated his faults, which are legion. But to acknowledge at the same time, you know, the things that he had accomplished and to report, you know, what the results were. And that didn't happen. I think it's just because reporters now are activists using journalism to advance their own political agendas.
That's for sure. And degrading them.
So you end up gushing over Jill and Joe Biden, which you'd think would be embarrassing, but apparently not.
You'd think it would be. I don't know. It's just amazing. Britt Hume, I appreciate your coming on tonight. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
So evidently over the weekend, there was a lot of mainstream press about, you know, Valentine's weekend, Jill and Joe, their love's going to heal the nation, and all of this pablum. And that's directly what Britt Hume was referring to. Are there any journalists anymore? Is this something? There was a time when people wanted to go to school and get a degree and be somewhat of an objective journalist. Now the mainstream media, they all say the same thing. They all kowtow to the same entities. And we sit around and many Americans, not all, many Americans just lap it up like Pavlov's dog, like this is just the truth. And I love the point Britt Hume made. He said that we heard about all of the faults which were paramount of the previous administration and Donald Trump, but we never heard anything about he did any good. Now, all we're hearing is about all the great things that this new administration is doing. No level of criticism whatsoever. That's our journalism in this day and age. When we return, the Oregon Department of Education is asking students to show their work in a math class. Why? They say it's a form of white supremacy. You've got to hear this one. It's next here on the Frank Sontag Show. Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. Thank you for joining us. Many decades ago, there was an ongoing commercial for the United Negro College Fund Scholarship, a program for black students. And the catchphrase was, "A mind is a terrible thing to waste." It was powerful. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. Listen to this story out of Oregon. And I'm going to walk through it slowly. Because for me, when I read it last night, there were many moments where I'm just staring going, that makes no sense. What does that mean? A mathematics guide sent out to Oregon schools tells educators that asking students to show their work in math class is a form of white supremacy. What? Let me read more. In an email sent out by the Oregon Department of Education, teachers were encouraged to enroll in a course called A Pathway to Equitable Math Instruction. The course came with an 82-page instructional guide that lists the ways in which white supremacy is perpetuated in math class. Listen to this, quote, "White supremacy culture infiltrates math classrooms and everyday teachers' actions. Coupled with the beliefs that underlie these actions, they perpetuate educational harm on black, Latinx, I think that's the way you pronounce it, and multilingual students, denying them full access to the world of mathematics," end quote. All right, that's quite an accusation. The guide offers a year-long framework for, quote, "deconstructing racism in mathematics." It's called "Visibilizing the Toxic Characteristics of White Supremacy Culture with Respect to Math." Okay, that's the setup. What's the deal with the math? Listen to this. Examples of classroom actions that allegedly perpetuate white supremacy include asking students to show their work, focusing on getting the right answer, tracking student success, and grading students. I'd go back and repeat those like what, but there's more. The guide claims that asking students to show their work is a crutch for teachers to understand what students are thinking. Can you imagine? Show me your work. How did you come to that conclusion? That's a crutch? It's considered white supremacy. Why? Because it allegedly reinforces paternalism and the worship of the written word. What? Worship of the written word is an alleged foundation of white supremacy culture, which reinforces documentation and writing skills. I'll read more. Math classes that focus on helping students get the right answer are also a form of what they say is perpetuating white supremacy. The guide claims that calling answers right and wrong perpetuates objectivity, which is considered a tenet of white culture. Okay, now hold on a second here. So what? There's no right or wrong answer? We don't want to perpetuate objectivity. We just want to go subjectivity. Hey, 3 plus 5 equals, let's see, 9,612. Good job, Joey. A friend I was just talking to that I hold in high regard, when I told him a little bit about the story, he said, so what? Mathematics is involved in like sending people to the moon. That's white supremacy? Let me read a little more. The concept of mathematics being purely objective, they say, is unequivocally false, and teaching it is even much less so. The guide says upholding the idea that there are always right and wrong answers perpetuates objectivity. I have to laugh. This is insanity. Tracking students is considered problematic as well. The guide considers tracking students a form of, quote, paternalism and power hoarding, as it is based on the idea that adults know what is right for the students. We got to read that one again. So tracking students is problematic, based in white supremacy. And the guide says tracking students is based on the idea, and it's wrong, that adults know what is right for students. I'm not making this up. To me, be more culturally inclusive, teachers must, quote, adapt homework policies to fit the needs of students of color. I'm not sure what that means. Teachers are also asked to, quote, identify and challenge the ways that math is used to uphold capitalistic, imperialistic, and racist views, end quote. If I only knew it when I tried to be a math major, that it was just steeped in white supremacy. Math, mathematics, right? We were taught a finite science. The instructional material, by the way, it's 82 pages. Let me say that one again. Boy, they sat down and spent 82 pages of drivel and nonsense and insanity, white supremacy. The instructional material also suggests teachers expose students to examples of people who have used math as a form of, wait for it, resistance. Let me say that nugget again. The instructional material is also suggests teachers expose students to examples of people who have used math as a form of resistance. This is in the state of Oregon. I'm not making this up. You can find this on the internets. Oregon Department of Education, asking students to show their work in math class as a form of white supremacy. Byline is Chrissy Clark. How do we end the show on that note? 2 + 2 does not equal 4. That's racist. You don't want kids showing their work. We don't want an answer that is based in right and wrong. That's objectivity. That's racist. Course came with an 82-page instructional guide that lists the way in which white supremacy is perpetuated in math class. Your comments are welcome. Email me at franksontag@kkla.com. I didn't get to the other story about woke teachers want Shakespeare out of the classroom. They say that's also about white supremacy. Shakespeare. This is the Frank Sontag Show.